And you're back with Annie on Solidarity Breakfast. And Peter Jobe is actually there. G'day, Peter. How are you?
Good morning, Annie. How are you?
Good. Now, the reason for why we're talking to you is because of your article in Declassified Australia. You take exception to the way our Prime Minister handled the visit of Modi, but from India over the Quad. Could you give us a little bit of a background about the general understanding of Modi's behaviour in his own country, in fact?
Well, despite the reception that Modi is presently getting in the United States, the U.S. State Department itself has documented extreme human rights abuses under Modi. These include extrajudicial killings by the government or its agents, arbitrary detention and arrest, political prisoners, torture and degrading treatment, and interference with the freedom of peaceful assembly and association. There's also been violence against journalists who crossed Modi and his party's position, and he's introduced legislation that discriminates particularly against Muslims and other religious and ethnic minorities. The U.S. State Department is not alone in doing that. Human Rights Watch and Amnesty International have also condemned his behaviour and what has been happening under his government, including extrajudicial killings, arbitrary detention. Modi was also accused of complicity in the 2002 Gujarat anti-Muslim riots. It's quite ironical, given the kind of reception he's getting in the United States at the moment, that for 10 years he would not have been allowed to travel to the United States due to the fact that he was under a diplomatic boycott due to what has been fairly well documented to be his complicity in the Gujarat massacres when he was first minister of Gujarat 20 years ago.
And this is him as the leader of the Hindu nationalist Bharatiya Janata Party, the BJP. And of course, these are ultra nationalist Hindus, and this is his rise and rise to power does actually seem to be hauntingly similar to Hitler.
Well, it's certainly, I would not say that India at the moment is in the same situation as Germany under Hitler, but certainly it is a very concerning situation for minorities and for anyone who values democracy and human rights. He has undermined India has never been a perfect country, of course, but it has had a secular tradition where, and he has certainly undermined that, and the human rights have significantly deteriorated under him.
Let's turn to the role that Albanese Australia has played in this chess game that has allowed Modi to be guilted, you know, but with, as in gold, shiny bright in the firmament of international politics.
Well, the Prime Minister Albanese's reception of Modi goes well beyond what is normal diplomatic protocol for even countries with whom we have normally good relations. He took part in what was effectively an election rally for Modi, one that was aimed at his domestic audience and was broadcast widely within India. When Anthony Albanese stood up in that stadium and called Modi the boss, he provided ammunition for the Modi's campaign back home, his domestic agenda. And, of course, it was taken at face value by many. Of course, by using the term the boss, he was making a reference to Bruce Springsteen. It's quite clear, if you look at the Indian media, however, that it wasn't interpreted that way. It was taken as face value. The BJP has used it in his campaigning. Now, when that happens, I should say that's not the first time Australia has supported autocrats and undermined democracy or moves towards democracy in a country. My main area of research, of course, is Indonesia and East Timor. Under the Suharto regime, the Australian government strongly supported Suharto and spoke in his favour when he was also engaged in severe human rights abuses. Indonesian dissidents later recounted the impact that had on them, that undermined their situation and made them more vulnerable. There's a bit of a myth that dictators are not vulnerable to foreign opinion. They very much are. When Australia supported Suharto, that undermined the dissident democratic forces that were trying to campaign against him. It made it easier for Suharto to suppress dissidents. And that's exactly the same as what's happening under Modi. When Anthony Albanese stands up and lauds Modi in extraordinary terms that are not usual for even some of our closest allies, that undermines political dissidents and political opposition in India. It makes it easier for Modi to enforce his agenda, which is a very repressive agenda. It sends a message to Modi that he can engage in human rights abuses, those well-documented human rights abuses, and that will not be an issue in the international arena, and that he will not be held accountable to them. And so it makes repression in India worse. That is also true, of course, of Anthony Albanese's visit to India earlier this year. Not the visit itself, of course. You can't say that there's anything wrong with that. But the way that Anthony Albanese went round to a series of stadiums and took part in effectively what were campaign rallies on behalf of Modi to support his domestic agenda.
Yeah, the interesting thing is it's hard to work out if Albanese is naive or if perhaps it's dovetailing into the courting of Modi into the revived Quad agenda. Do you have anything to say on that?
Well, Mr. Albanese clearly sees Modi as very important in Australian diplomatic relations. The Quad, of course, is something that goes back a few years. It was originally established in 2007. It was the brainchild of then Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe. But it was revived more recently, and only in 2021 did it become a leaders' meeting. Now, getting India on side against China is part of the U.S. Agenda to favour Western interests over above Chinese interests. As you probably know, there's been a lot of what you could almost say is hysteria against China in recent years. I find it quite ironic because 15 years ago, it was something the opposite. I was campaigning about human rights in China when Hu Jintao addressed Australian Parliament. So I was at a rally and I was called very naive for campaigning about Chinese human rights. Now I find myself, without having changed my position, as not campaigning for China, but pointing out the very dangerous way in which Australia and other nations and many in the media are ramping up against tensions against China in what could only be called a hysterical manner.
Yeah.
Now, we've got to understand that India is different to the United States. Its agenda is not the same. Nevertheless, that does feed into the US-Australia agenda, and it is destabilizing. It's encouraging what international relations theorists tend to call a security dilemma. When one country rallies and arms against another, that causes that same country to do the same and ramps up tensions. That's what happened before the First World War, and there's a grave danger that could happen now.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Thank you very much for talking to us through this. It's pretty worrying stuff, isn't it?
It is, and it's unnecessary. We want good relations with the Indian people. India is an important country. It deserves a prominent place in the world stage, and we should be friendly with the Indian people. But that does not mean the kind of deference that Albanese showed to one particular leader. We don't know the future of India. It's not inevitable that Modi will be in power forever, and that the decay of Indian democracy is not inevitable. We want friendship with the Indian people, but that calling a dictator and an autocrat the boss in the way that our Prime Minister did is not good for Australia and is unnecessary.
Thanks for talking to us this morning, Peter.
Thanks very much, Annie.